Hi, this is Sandeep Bhartia, and welcome to TFR Insights. And let's meet our guest today. Today we have with us Alexander Gennaris, CEO of Polyverse. Alex, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here and good to see you again, Swapna.
Last time we met, a lot of things have changed. Now we are all locked inside our houses.
Yep.
Which, you know, for someone like me, it's fine. I work from home, but there are a lot of people who don't. And now a lot of companies are rushing towards work from home model. And it is also creating kind of a new challenges for IT. A lot of security issues are popping up, which we never thought about. So from what I want to understand from you, especially the Polyverse perspective, that what kind of new IT and security related challenges this COVID-19 has created for all these companies who are rushing into to work from home model?
It's a great question. And we're certainly seeing with our customers a pretty dramatic increase in cybersecurity issues across the board. And it kind of gets to a very fundamental issue, if you will, that's going on right now, where it's a time of great change, right? And everybody's routines and habits and patterns are getting disrupted. And if you're an attacker, that's sort of music to your ears, because it's a time when you can prey upon people's confusion and fear and so forth. And one really good example where we see this now is increase in phishing attacks, right? And you'll see people sending out either fake Zoom links or just even fake instructions on how to get to the VPN or how to get to the corporate network or whatever. Because it might be a set of things that people never had to do before, and now they're trying to do it, and the attackers are preying upon that, that disruption of habits and confusion to try to trick people into going to nefarious websites or revealing passwords or other types of sensitive information. So we're absolutely seeing an increase in attacks these days.
Is there any common practices or malpractices that we just tend to make? Like for example, Zoom. Most of people they would log in without any password, and anybody who has access to the ID can log in. So, are there any kind of common mistakes that you notice that people are making, and you would advise against those?
Old style security mentality just doesn't work anymore, and you hear a phrase being bandied about a lot called zero trust security. And, what is zero trust? Well, I mean, it's one of these marketing buzzwords, so it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But, fundamentally, the old style model, if you will, was you built your castle and your castle walls, right? And so when you're inside the corporate network, everything was safe and secure, quote, quote, safe and secure. You trusted things inside the castle, inside your corporate firewall. And you didn't trust anything on the outside. Okay, that works fine that didn't work fine before, but you at least had the illusion of everybody was showing up to the office, and so you actually did have, at least a chance of doing something there. But now when everybody's working from home, that entire model of having VPNs and firewalls around your corporate network and all that, that's completely shot to heck, right? Because everybody now is at home and coming in, coming in remotely. And so what is that moat? What is that wall that you have anymore if 100% of your workforce is now, coming in from arbitrary places over the internet? So that sort of fundamental model that people had before, so that legacy, firewall-based security model and VPN-based security model just doesn't hold up it wasn't holding up before, but it very much does not hold up in a world in which, everybody needs to work from home as we deal with this coronavirus crisis. And so shifting a little bit then to what can you do about it? Right. This is where really focusing in on, this security by default, the intrinsic cyber resiliency. There's a lot of zero trust solutions, but you sort of think about what that means. It says, don't rely on a perimeter defense. Make every one of your systems from, the deepest deepest system in your data center to your edge devices, to your laptops, to the whole thing. If every one of your devices has to authenticate, you've got to prove who you are, and every one of these computing systems is intrinsically resilient, whether it's using polymorphing technologies or something else, then you've got a really strong defense in depth where every piece of your systems are defended, and it doesn't really matter whether you're in or out. That's kind of the whole point of zero trust, is everything's on the outside, if you will.
Have you seen any increase in attacks, and what kind of attacks are those?
Yeah, so we've definitely seen increase in attacks, and our customers have reported this to us as well. And they're basically two major classes that I would say we're seeing. And I want to caution, at this point, at this stage of the crisis, this data is anecdotal. We're not yet at a point where, all the dust has settled and we're able to collect up all the data and analyze it and do proper, a proper mathematical treatment. But anecdotally, we're seeing a dramatic increase in phishing attacks for all the reasons I was describing before. There's a lot of confusion in the world, so that's perfect opportunity for phishing. The other thing we're seeing is a increase in fileless attacks. Because you think about all these sort of memory-based attacks where just your data center systems, your cloud systems, and so forth are being probed remotely. And if you look at the reason behind this, it has to do with, again, the sort of legacy model of cybersecurity where you have a 24/7 security operations center, right? Most security solutions these days are reactive in nature. Right. Something bad happens, you run whatever fancy algorithm, AI, whatever, and maybe you detect it, maybe you don't. There's some error rate with it and whatnot. And then you literally have a human going in and looking at the results of these things. And they can be using some really fabulous tools like Microfocus, ArcSight, or Splunk, or what have you. But fundamentally, the model relies on having a set of humans watching over what's going on. Well, that's fine if you have the humans. What happens when you don't have the humans, or they can't show up to your security operations center because you're locked down in quarantine, or hopefully they're really, we're not in a world where we wish anybody to be sick, but it's happening, right? People are getting sick, and so a model that relies on having perfect staffing, 24/7 of a set of humans in a physical location, that is a very problematic model in a pandemic world. And the attackers know this, and they know that the IT staff, not only are they sort of challenged in a labor force perspective, but even if everybody's healthy and showing up to work, you're still getting overwhelmed with your VPN, right? And we've heard a lot of reports of customers having to ration out their VPN and tell their employees, well, you can log on from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. and you can log on from 10 to 11. So your IT staff is just overwhelmed right now, even if they can show up to work. And so it's the perfect time to go launch a data center attack, particularly one of these, fileless attacks, because the folks that are supposed to be watching are distracted or unavailable.
And is there any specific motivation behind attacks these days, or is the same where you just want to steal some credential, or there are some unique motivations because of this crisis?
I haven't heard of any unique motivations because of the crisis. If you think generically, into the major categories of cyber actors and their motivations, you can break it into a couple different categories. You have your nation states where they're doing this for some political agenda, whether it's Russia meddling with elections or China stealing plans and information and trade secrets and so forth. There's a national agenda and there's serious money behind it. And sometimes that national agenda, if you take some of the states like Iran, the agenda is go cause trouble. It isn't necessarily financially driven. So you got your state actors, then you have your organized crime, and by and large, that's financially driven, right? And they're looking for your health information, they're looking for your credit cards, your banking information, and so forth. And then your final set of actors are basically, I'm gonna call them the glory hunters. These are the folks that want to be involved in nation states or organized crime, but they're out there just causing trouble to make a name for themselves. Or it's the so-called script kiddies. But they basically don't have any agenda other than fame for themselves. And those folks can be particularly troublesome because they're just causing trouble, right?
Right.
Anyway, so all those motivations, they were there 6 weeks ago as much as they are now. And I don't know right now of anything where the coronavirus itself is creating a new set of motivations.
Right, right. I was just, assuming that maybe because a lot of things are moving, a lot of health data and a lot of critical things that were done in person because of a lot of reasons, now those things are being done online. So all those transactions, all those interactions have not moved online. So maybe there are some motives to still. But you're right, it's too early to say. No,
I agree with that. So this is where the opportunities are much larger. The motives are still there, but the opportunity for somebody to go cause trouble has dramatically increased by like an order of magnitude. And that's why I think we're seeing the corresponding rise in attacks, because, the desire to go make money or cause trouble or whatever, any of those motivations we went through, that's still been there, but now it's just easier than ever.
I also want to touch a bit upon what is going on with Zoom, because there was, first of all, it came out as a rescue, boat where, a lot of people can, but then there were a lot of, security related in implication that where they're sharing data with Facebook and all those companies, there are a lot of leaks are happening. To tell us a bit about what exactly is going on with Zoom and what they have done to mitigate that.
Zoom is a very interesting case study in security in a lot of different dimensions. If you set security aside, Zoom has done a brilliant job with their product. We're on a Zoom call right now. I've used a lot of the competitive systems, whether it's Microsoft Teams or something else. And they just don't match the level of ease of use, experience, quality. Just the fit and finish on Zoom is phenomenal. And they've done a really, really good job. And I think that's why they're seeing the success they're seeing, even though this is a field that has been around for, at least 15, maybe more years of products. Just those products were never very good. And Zoom really, really nailed that user experience and sort of seamless product. But they did it at the cost of security, right? We can jump on and just go have a Zoom call, but actually, if anybody knew the number, they could hop onto this video right now. So Zoom fundamentally said, hey, we're gonna use what in security parlance goes by the name of security through obscurity. Right. As long as we just have this little secret called this one number between us, that's our security model. And, that yields a very simple and hassle-free user experience, but at the cost of, that fundamental security model. And so their CEO just recently, I forget how many days ago, but it was in the last week or so, announced a stand down for the company to go work on these things. And so I think time will tell, how they approach the solutions, whether they give up some of that user experience or if they're able to come up with a very elegant model that, maintains that fit and finish and high quality experience they've created, but adds in security. So I do applaud them for owning the issue and you know, directing his company to go focus on it. So we'll see what they do.
I want to talk about the polymorphic model that you talked about earlier, that if people are using this model, how much protection they get on all those attacks and hacks that are happening. Because what you literally do, as you explained last time, is that every system is a unique system. So, you are kind of, raising the bar for hackers to compromise those systems.
So the fundamental, approach that we take with this polymorphing technology, as you were saying, is to create all this diversity in the environment and create that sort of intrinsic cyber resilience. So the systems are secure, even if you aren't patching them, even if you aren't or rapidly deploying the patches, even if you aren't monitoring it 24/7, it's got this intrinsic reliability to the system. And that's one of the things that's particularly valuable, in today's world for, for all the reasons that we were talking about, right? Where, if your IT staff is either unavailable or busy, and they aren't able to do the sort of traditional legacy watch these things 24/7 like a hawk, that intrinsic reliability and cyber resiliency is an incredibly advantageous feature.
One more thing, because of this work from home, shelter at home, and all those curfew orders, you cannot even send your engineers at an edge, where your data center or your devices are installed to actually. So because of this crisis, we are in a unique situation where we have started thinking about those cases where you do have to automate a lot of things. And you also have to build your system in a manner, as you explained, polymorphic model, where you don't actually have to worry about. So how does COVID-19 change the whole security landscape in a way that people start to rethink how they build their system and infrastructure?
I think it will. And it kind of goes back to my earlier comments about, the zero trust, right? Every legacy traditional cybersecurity approach fundamentally relied on assumptions that aren't true anymore, right? Relied on the assumption that everybody would physically be in the same building, or relied on the assumption that that you had IT staff that you could send out to the field or send out to go patch things or what have you. And when those assumptions about where your employees are and the availability of IT staff are broken, then so is your security model. Right. So I do think this will, this is dramatically heightened the need, because zero trust has been in the it's been a buzzword for years now, and everybody keeps talking about it, yet how many companies are still relying on a VPN? I mean, just take the simplest thing, and it's not that they're bad for relying on a VPN. There's a lot of good uses for a VPN. We use VPNs at Polyverse, but we use a VPN in a zero trust fashion, which is the important distinction. Now you don't have the luxury of just chatting about it anymore. You have to do something, right? Like every CISO and CIO has to make a change now, because those old assumptions are gone and they disappeared literally overnight when the president or the state governor, depending on where you are, says shelter at home, right? Everything you thought you knew about the world and how you would run your company just changed, and it changes instantaneously. And so CIOs are gonna have to adapt to this.